Since 2011, voucher programs have been expanded by the state legislature in Wisconsin. Milwaukee's decades-old voucher program was replicated in Racine, and then Governor Walker signed into law a statewide expansion of voucher schools and a special needs voucher program.
This year, the number of private schools accepting vouchers is expanding, and each year, the cap on the allowable percentage of voucher students in a district goes up. The numbers are drawing out tensions between public schools and private voucher schools.
Advocates of voucher schools say competition benefits students and families, while critics worry that the funding going to those voucher schools will ultimately hurt the quality of education at public schools.
Erin Richards joins us now. She's the education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Erin, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Well, Erin, why is this coming school year, next fall, shaping up to be maybe a pivotal one when it comes to these tensions that you wrote about in communities and in schools over the state's voucher program?
The statewide voucher program started in the fall of 2014. That was the first year that it went live, and it was really tightly capped in the first couple of years. I think only about 500 kids could participate in the first year. Only 1,000 children, I think, were limited in the second year, and then we started going toward this cap. So it started with 1%. This year we're going toward 2% of the kids who live in a district are eligible. No more than that can attend a private school in that area on a voucher. And the next year it'll be 3% and 4% the following year, up until 10%, and then an unlimited number of kids can participate. The reason why we took a closer look at this program this year is that there's enough traction with this program now that more private schools around the state are sort of like, you know what, this might make sense for us. You know, maybe our enrollment's dropping. Maybe we could bolster what we're doing with some additional funding. So this was the year it just felt like more schools were kind of jumping in. And when we saw the numbers this winter of the number of private schools that had signed up to participate in the program for the first time, we saw way more schools statewide that jumped in as opposed to Racine, which is geographically limited, and Milwaukee, which has been around for so long that there's a kind of a saturation point that's happened here with private schools that register. So the growth that we're seeing in the moment is really in the statewide, private schools statewide, and that's why it felt like a good time to take a look at what was happening.
Now, you've been on this show before explaining the differences between public schools and charter schools and voucher schools, and I think it bears doing a quick check-in on that because sometimes the terminology is confusing. Erin, what is a voucher school versus, let's say, a charter school?
Sure. Voucher schools are always private schools. Most of them are religious schools. And the whole point of a voucher is to offer a taxpayer-funded tuition subsidy for a child to attend a private, usually religious school. That's very different from charter schools because charter schools are fully public. They just operate with some more flexibility from the traditional rules that a public school would follow. So, again, the big difference is charter schools are public. They operate kind of like your normal public school, but they've got some freedom from rules. They might be able to have a longer school day. They might be able to mandate uniforms. Voucher schools are always private, so they are wholly private institutions, and they don't necessarily have to turn over data like high school graduation rates or staff rosters. So they operate as private entities, but they receive taxpayer funding to give parents more options on where to send their kids to school.
And so essentially what happens if a student is going to a public school, that school gets a certain amount of money to finance that student's education, they leave for a private voucher school, what happens to the money?
Sure. So a couple things happen. And in the statewide program, you have to be kind of specific about what's happening. If you are attending a public school and you're eligible to switch over and take a voucher to a local private school, it actually benefits the district or the taxpayers, I should say, because the cost of the voucher is less than the cost that we pay for students in public schools. Taxpayers would actually see a little bit of a decrease because all of a sudden that student who was in a public school would suddenly be in the private school on less taxpayer money overall. But in the first couple years of the statewide program, we didn't see that happening. What we saw, because of the way the legislation was written, was that it allowed kids who were already in the private schools and were already attending as private pay students, or maybe they were on a scholarship that was offered by the church or the school itself, those kids could just switch over if they met the income requirement, which is pretty low. I think you have to come from a family that's making no more than about $44,000 if you're a family of four. But if you were in the private school and you met that income requirement, you could flip over and use a voucher. And that worried school districts statewide in the beginning because they saw that all of a sudden, starting last year, they had to raise additional taxes for kids who were already in the private schools. They had flipped over to using a voucher in the first couple of years of the program. And so then they were raising money for kids who weren't part of their district to begin with. They were private school students. And that's where you saw the real concern. And because this is such a new program and districts outstate haven't really dealt with these complexities in the way that Milwaukee schools have for a long time, that's where you saw some of the worry come in, because districts were saying, hey, look, we're raising taxes on our residents for some kids, and it may not be a ton yet. It might be 5, might be 10, might be 20, but we're raising taxes for kids that we've never had to fund before. So that's actually having an impact on our local property taxpayers. They're paying a little bit more to pay for these students if they were never part of our public system.
And Aaron, you wrote about the Chilton School District, a place that seemed like a model for community cohesion, but you saw that it may be that there is some of this tension you're writing about over voucher schools that could strain that community. Can you tell us about that situation?
Sure. So Chilton is like some small towns in Wisconsin that just have one public elementary school, a public middle school, a public high school. And then there's one other school option in town, a private school option. That's Chilton Area Catholic School. Now, for a long time, Chilton Area Catholic School and the public school system have had a really good relationship. In small towns especially, everybody knows each other. You see these people at the grocery stores. The Catholic school would use the high school auditorium for events. When the high school was building its new performing arts center, students from the Chilton Public School used the Catholic school facilities. So all of those relationships, in many ways, have been sort of your traditional relationship in small towns between public and private entities. But now that there's the program that introduces a funding component here, and in some ways, when you're introducing competition to the school marketplace, you do set up schools to look at the fact that if you are having to raise money to pay for students in another system, you are introducing some concern, at least in Chilton, and the superintendent is fairly new there. And she said, look, you know, I have nothing against the principal at the Catholic school. We've had a good relationship in the 6 months that I've been here. But, you know, I worry about what this means for my district in the long run. And in many ways, I would not say in Wisconsin that there are all-out fights in these communities. In a lot of places, people are adjusting to the new reality in all the ways you normally would. But in some places, the tension is a little bit under the surface. Nobody really wants to speak bad about their neighbor. But a lot of superintendents feel that, you know, they need to advocate for their district, but they might be refraining from putting stuff on their Facebook district page that says, hey, you know, like, don't use vouchers because then they receive some negative comments from folks in the community who are in favor of private school vouchers. So it's introducing a new component, and people are, for the most part, learning to navigate it. And I think some communities are navigating the new reality easier than others.
You did hear some concern about the way that the tax money is raised for these vouchers, in that it doesn't seem to be necessarily transparent on the form where the money is going to. Can you explain that a little more?
Sure. So again, this would be for students who, for districts that are raising money for students who were never part of their public system. So in reality, this means that there's a certain number of kids in private schools that flip to using a voucher in the first couple of years of the program. And the districts that those children are in are on the hook for paying for those kids for the rest of their education career, as long as they stay on a voucher in the private school, in ways that that district was never obligated to pay for those kids before. So if you started your private school career, you stayed in private schools all the way through, the public school district, I mean, you as your family, if you own property, you would be paying property taxes toward the public school district, but you wouldn't be utilizing that option, and the public school wouldn't really be paying for you because you're outside of their realm. So in districts where the students flip to using a voucher and that are in the private school, the district is having to raise tax dollars for those students. but it flows right through them and to the private school. So in some districts around the state, I heard superintendents say, you know, we just wish this was more transparent. We wish that people knew that this part of the levy is actually for your public schools. And this additional part of the levy that we had to raise is actually for these 5 or 10 or 20 kids that are attending the private school in town. And a lot of superintendents just wanted that to be more transparent because they felt that if people knew the financial breakdown, it might change their opinions, or at least it might just let them know this is what you're paying for and this is how the new program works.
Erin Richards stays with us now. She's the education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we're talking about her recent piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about growing tensions between public school districts and the growing number of voucher schools in Wisconsin.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. As the statewide voucher program expands, available everywhere, what's happening in your community? Do you see this tension between public and voucher schools? How are things working out if you're a parent, if you work in a public or private school that's taking vouchers? How do you see this playing out in your district? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Erin Richards is with us. She's the education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us to talk about what may be growing tensions between public school districts and voucher schools in Wisconsin as the number of voucher schools goes up.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's happening in your community? Are you seeing this tension between the public schools and private schools now that vouchers are available in more places, everywhere, more or less? Do you support Wisconsin's growing move toward supporting private schools via vouchers? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Jacob on the line with us first in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Hi. To me, it seems a bit like there's some tortured reasoning in presenting this issue to the public. I just want to bring up the point that aren't these school properties also tax-free as religious organizations?
So, Erin, are some of these private schools receiving some tax relief already?
You know, I'm not quite sure how that would play into the funding scheme, but as you know, as the schools that are part of churches, you know, parish schools, so quite a few Catholic and Lutheran schools around the state that are now participating in this program, they certainly are, you know, afforded the tax-free option as being part of a religious institution. So that is one element. But I think the new twist or the new element that makes this sort of a new dynamic statewide is the transfer of public funds and public dollars to those institutions that weren't getting them before.
Jacob, thanks for the call and the question. We go on to Liz joining us in Eau Claire. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. My question is, it's sort of, I have, in Eau Claire, the children who signed up for the voucher, according to our local newspaper, a lot of them were already enrolled in the private religious school. And so it seems to me that these parents who receive vouchers for their children to attend a school they're already attending, when I thought the intent of the program was to help lower-income children attend a school of their choice, it just doesn't seem like it's working that way, in Eau Claire anyway.
Liz, thanks for the question. Erin, what do you say to that?
Yep, Liz, this is a really great question, and a lot of people have asked that very same question. Actually, after the first 2 years of the program, Republicans who are in charge of the government right now realized that this was happening, that the intent wasn't just to fund students switching from being a private pay student onto a voucher. If the intent was to allow students an option, to allow especially public school students who maybe could never consider private school because they couldn't afford it. So if that was the intent, then they needed to figure out ways to make sure that they weren't encouraging just the flipping. And that is actually in place now. It sort of quietly went into effect last year. I think there'll be some more publicity about it this year. They've limited now how and which students can get vouchers. So they've limited it to children who are entering school for the first time in kindergarten, or so kindergarten, three-year-old kindergarten, four-year-old kindergarten, or first grade, whether you're a public or a private school student, you can enter at the first grade level or the ninth grade level. So they've tried to limit it to those transitional points, meaning that if you just happen to be a third grade student in a private school right now that has decided to accept vouchers, in the first 2 years of the program, if you met the income requirement, you could have just flipped. Now you actually have to wait until you're up to that ninth grade level, then you could switch to using a voucher.
Liz, thanks so much for that question. And we're going to move to Jerry in Eureka next. Jerry, hi.
Hi. My question is related to the statement that was made that private schools are doing the educational process at a less cost than the public school. How do you factor in the cost of special needs children, that whether the child who typically attends the public school is in the public school and maybe a $1,000 a year child, or the speech language therapist or the Title I into the private school, did you factor that into your cost analysis?
Jerry, thanks for that. Aaron?
Yep. So this is another really good question, because most people who work in education or just know anything about education know that to educate students with mild to severe special needs costs more money. They need more specialists. They need more individualized instruction. They, you know, the needs of every child are quite different when they have disabilities, especially, so those costs can go up. And what happens is if a child with a special need decides to switch into a private school on a voucher, that school, the private school, doesn't get more money for that child. However, there is another program that was started recently in Wisconsin. It's called the Special Needs Voucher Program. It is still a voucher program, but it is limited to a certain number of children in the state. And if children qualify for that voucher and they switch to a private school, they bring their private school up to, I think, about $12,000. At least that's what it was in the first year. It might be going up a little bit this year. But that's the only other way that a private school would get those additional monies to help serve a child with special needs, is if they were receiving a child who qualified for that special needs voucher. Otherwise, it's up to the parent. If they think that the private school can still serve their children in the way that they think they, you know, need services on the cost of the voucher alone, or however else a private school decides to subsidize that, that is up to the parent and their choice.
Jerry, thank you for the question. And Aaron, one school official you spoke to said that they were worried about a gulf springing up between what they called elite students who went to private schools and the students who went to public schools. Do we have data about who's going to which school and how that could be affecting, for example, reporting of grades and that kind of thing under the growing voucher system so far?
The data is really difficult to track on this, because what you'll find, especially in private schools across the state, is they don't classify children as special needs in the same way that public schools do. The reason why public schools know very specifically how many students with special needs they're serving is that under the IDEA, that's a federal law that mandates public schools must serve students with special needs, school districts develop an individual plan for each of those students. So it's very easy to track what percentage of a district is part of the special needs population. Private schools don't necessarily track those numbers. They're not under obligation of the federal law to serve those students in the same way. And parents may not want their children labeled in the private school. So overall, what that means is, when you hear that concern from the public school, is that there is this lingering fear that parents who are the most advantaged and the most able to make decisions for their children may try to switch them into schools that they perceive as being, you know, smaller class sizes, or if they're private, maybe they've got, you know, additional resources for kids, and that it would leave sort of the higher needs, the more expensive to serve students, the most difficult to serve students, the bigger behavior problem students, that those students would be sort of left in the public school. And in some ways that means that the cost of the really expensive students, the ones with, you know, really, you know, expensive to serve special needs, gets spread out over a smaller number of students. So over time it could become, you know, theoretically, if you play this out, it could become more difficult for a district to serve those students if more of their sort of higher performing, you know, elite students, if you will, leave the district.
And Aaron, Both President Trump and his education secretary are supporters of voucher schools. We've seen a little money pledged that way so far. Is that likely to change, maybe dramatically change, the landscape even more here in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, there was initially this idea floated that, you know, President Trump, during his campaign, promised, you know, $20 billion for school choice. That means charter school options and voucher school options. The likelihood of a federal voucher program is just very unlikely. What would be more likely is some kind of maybe a first-ever federal tuition tax credit or something that would sort of indirectly benefit private schools. A lot of states still have laws on the books that actually prohibit the flow of public funding into religious institutions. Wisconsin doesn't have that, but I think more than 30 other states still do. So at the federal level, that other option could be one way to get around that. What we know is that there's an appetite for it. President Trump, Betsy DeVos, Vice President Michael Pence, who presided over a rapid expansion of private school choice in Indiana, are all in favor of these types of publicly funded options that may be outside of your traditional school district. So I think you're going to see more activity around that, but we just don't know exactly what it's going to look like yet, and we don't know what it'll be, you know, how it'll will affect states at the local level. I still think more of the activity is going to be driven by state houses, but there certainly is an appetite for it and an invitation to consider it from the federal administration.
Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Erin Richards, education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and she was with us there to talk about growing tensions in some communities between public school districts and voucher schools, which are on the rise here in Wisconsin. And if this is something you're seeing play out in your community, in your family, let us know what you think. Share your stories, your questions over on the Central Time Facebook page.